All right. Thank you for listening to the Baltimore Informer podcast. This is Adam Reuter. Joining me today in studio is John Thorman. He's running for Maryland's 2nd Congressional District. Welcome to the studio, John.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
So, John, what's it been like running for office so far, getting out there and, you know, pressing the flesh and whatnot?
It's been a great experience. I feel really blessed to be able to get out there and meet so many great people in the district and hear the things that are most important to them and the things that they're struggling with due to the current conditions of our economy. And I've made a lot of great friends, and it's just been a real blessing to go out there and meet all those folks.
Well, that's good to hear, because as many people know, I did run for office one time, and it's an interesting experience. It's like nothing else, really, running for any office. And like, you know, I had volunteered for a lot of different campaigns, and I thought I knew what I was doing, and I thought I knew what it was all about. And until you're actually in it, and have you done candidate forums and things like that already?
I have done 2 candidate forums so far. Well, one was a forum out in Carroll County, and the other was an event for a future candidate where he's going to be a Maryland state delegate, and all 3 of the candidates for the 2nd district were there at the same time. So we haven't had a debate. It's just where each of us has had our own opportunity to sort of give our pitch and tell voters where we're coming from and you know what we would like to do.
Okay, cool. Do you have any ones that are upcoming that people can go to?
I do.
I'm putting you on the spot there, but
well, there's 2 things coming up. One is a candidate forum, and that's being held by former state delegate Pat McDonough, and that's May 4th. That's a Saturday. That's going to be 2:00 to 5:00 at Cub Hill Presbyterian Church, and then also that same day, the Towson Festival begins.
Oh, okay.
And I'll be down at the Towson Festival in the morning at the Baltimore County Central Committee booth that they have, and talking to people and handing out literature.
Okay, cool, man. Yeah, Towson Town Festival. I've actually honestly never been there. Maybe I'll go this year.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of people. It's a really great vibe, and all the great restaurants are set up, and you can get some really great food out there.
Okay. I'll go there, maybe hand out some Baltimore County Informer flyers.
Absolutely. Opportunity to market yourself.
So why did you want to run for office? I guess that's the question everybody gets asked, but I have to ask it.
That's a good question. I actually ran for office once before, and that was in 2022. I ran for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate from Maryland. And at that time, that's where inflation had peaked at 9%, and we all remember that was the worst inflation since the Jimmy Carter presidency. And gas prices were around $5 a gallon. Grocery store shelves were empty. The price of everything was going up. And I was just really frustrated with it. I had never run before and didn't really know what I was doing. And honestly, running for a statewide office was a pretty big task.
Oh, you ran for state senate?
United okay. States Senate.
A United States Senate.
Statewide okay. office. And I did okay. I actually ran only for a short period of time. I ran for 3 months. I spent $5,000, and I came in 3rd out of 10 candidates. So I felt like I had a good connection with people, and I had a pretty good idea of how to get around the state effectively and meet people. And I thought, well, if I had more time to do it, maybe I would come out with a better outcome. So I had signed up to run for this year. Senator Ben Cardin is retiring, so that's an open seat here in Maryland. He's a Democrat. So I had signed up for that and had begun to run for that nomination. And then Dutch Ruppersberger, who is the current congressman in Maryland's 2nd District, he announced his retirement. And I spoke with a few friends, got some input, and made the decision to switch races because I thought 2 things. One, considering what I was trying to accomplish based on my beliefs and my values when I got down to Washington, and I realized I could accomplish the same things essentially from the Senate or from the House of Representatives. So I went ahead and made the switch, and I've been running in this race since February. And the things are basically the same. The inflation is not as high as it was, but inflation is still high. Prices are still high. And I think the economy is still in trouble. So that's sort of what got me into it.
You're on Facebook, right?
I am on Facebook. My page is simply titled John Thorman for Congress.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask, you're familiar that Facebook serves up memories, right? So posts from years ago.
Yes.
You know what came across my feed a couple days ago?
What came across?
Johnny O talking about Towson safety and saying that the safety of Towson is the... Anyway, and I saw this. I said, this is the same thing, different year. And like you said, it's like the same mistakes keep getting repeated. And, you know, now when there's no incumbent in office, honestly, it's the best time to get new blood in there.
It is the best chance to flip a seat. No matter what party you're with, when the seat is open, it's the best chance if you're the opposition party to take over that seat. And with conditions the way they are in the country, I feel like I have a really great chance of winning this in November.
Yeah, and the reason I bring up Johnny O's name, number one, I ran against him 2 years ago. If you end up winning the primary, and more than likely Johnny O will be the Democratic nominee, he just has all the endorsements. He has a boatload of money. I mean, I would put, you know, big money on him winning. So the reason I bring that up is just, you know, he's not new blood. He just isn't. He is a part of the machine. Nothing's going to change. He will be a younger Rupersberger. In fact, I heard that Rupersberger's son was possibly going to run, and then there's some issues with that. I don't know anything about that. All I know is Johnny O is the golden boy, and they want him in because if he gets in, you know, he's a young, healthy guy. More than likely, he will be in for, you know, 30, 40 years. And, you know, nothing's going to change. Like, I'll just say this to Baltimore County residents. Do you like the economy right now? Do you like how your life is going? Do you like struggling to pay for bills? Do you like putting less groceries in the cart because you can only afford so many? You like putting groceries onto a credit card? Do you like not having the ability to pay your bills and worrying about being evicted? Because let me tell you something, as a Democratic candidate, I was so worried about everybody being evicted after the moratorium was over from COVID. And it happened. And that is something the media is not telling anybody. They call it eviction court, is crazy. And especially in Baltimore City, but definitely in Baltimore County too. And so, I mean, you know, that's why, and I think you believe in reducing the national debt. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the primary things I would like to do. It's going to be a challenge because there's Republicans and Democrats who like to spend money. But, you know, generally speaking, we're spending at debt and deficit levels that we haven't seen since World War II, and we're technically at peacetime.
Right. That is insane to have. I remember, I think when President Trump was in office, when it was around $27 trillion, and now it's like close to 35 or 34. I know it's over 34.
It's over 34, and if nothing changes by this time next year, it'll be $36 trillion. The deficit is right around $2 trillion a year, so if you were to win one of the big lotteries for $200 million, you'd be set for life. Your kids would be set for life. Your grandkids would probably be set for life. The United States government is spending $200 million an hour in debt.
And you know what's different between World War II and nowadays?
We're not at war.
Well, besides that.
Tell me.
This country doesn't make stuff anymore like it used to.
Well, that's true. Under the Trump economic policies, we were starting to see a resurgence in
manufacturing jobs, yeah,
in America. And with Joe Biden taking over, that has stalled. I don't know that we've lost so much. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but I know it has definitely stalled.
Yeah. Well, I here's what I know. A lot of people around our area, a lot of people went to Bethlehem Steel, and they had great paying jobs there. Now, they were tough jobs, don't get me wrong, but and that was manufacturing different steel things. And, you know, I don't know all the, you know, I'm sure they got the impurities out, and I don't know on specifically what they did at Bethlehem Steel, but I know railroad was a big deal, right? They made a lot of the railroads.
That was a little bit before my time. I'm not sure exactly what they manufactured down there. There was a lot of shipping manufacturing going on down at the point too, I think, where they were making steel for ships.
Yeah, my point is these were good paying jobs, and it's gone away, and we are more of like a logistics economy where, you know, we have people who make, you know, they come up with ideas for things, but then they're made in China, they're made in Taiwan, they're made in who knows, you know, like even Under Armour. Under Armour used to make, you know, they say like the, you know, the guy who made, I can't think of his name now, but he used to make the Under Armour clothing in his basement. Well, that hasn't been the case. You know, I don't even know if they make the professional stuff anymore in the United States. You know, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But the point is, like, our economy, it's going to be very difficult to recover from this inflationary spending. It's very concerning for myself, who I would like to retire one day and, you know, like not have to worry about things as much. It's very worrying. It's very worrying for my younger relatives, you know, about them getting jobs. And like, so this, you know, we need somebody like yourself in office, I think, that, you know, cares about the middle class. So,
yeah, look, the Biden policies are directly responsible for the inflation that we have. They keep doing things that are putting more tax dollars into the economy, and they've done nothing to help businesses. They've done nothing to help the supply side of the economy. And for example, they're trying to pass or go around the Supreme Court or whatever they're trying to do to forgive more college debt,
yes,
college tuition debt. And that sounds great for people that have college tuition debt, but the reality is that that's a lot of money that they're talking about doing. And that is basically going to take the money that people were paying towards that college bill, and now they're going to put it back into the economy. And the economy, you know, it's this complex thing. Very few people know it extremely well. Some great economists out there like Larry Kudlow and Thomas Sowell. These are some really smart guys, and they study this. But basically, it's not just people spending stuff. And what Joe Biden's policies seem to be is just put cash in people's hands and let them buy stuff, and the result will be businesses will grow. But that's a short-term burst of cash. That's not a long-term organic economic growth through people growing in income in their jobs and moving on to better paying jobs.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, and this is for anybody right now who's in high school, who might be, because I will be promoting this at high schools, the Baltimore County Informer website. I am be very cautious of going to college for certain degrees, because all you have to do is look at all the people who can't pay back their student loans. That should tell you everything you need to know about whether a college degree is worth it or not. Like, I'm sorry, but, you know, even if, you know, the most you can, I mean, I'll just put it this way. I went to college. I believe I was sold a lie. I graduated from college. Has not, I mean, it's helped me slightly, but how much has it really helped? I honestly believe I should have spent my younger years, the first 4 years out of high school, gaining experience. Possibly, instead of spending money on college tuition, spending it on, we'll just say, tools for the line of work that I do, and then gaining experience through that. And I mean, a lot of people, unless you're going to be like a doctor, or we call it the STEM fields, it's just not worth the debt. I do recommend, if you want to go to college, community college is a good option. To his credit, Johnny O and crew, it's not really free. Taxpayers are paying for it. But the CCBCs around the county, depending on qualifications, you can get, you know, quote unquote, free tuition. So I would explore those options. but I would look into the Bureau of Labor Statistics and getting their numbers before you, you know, don't follow your dreams, follow your dreams and the money, because dreams can be crushed under financial stress. I'm sorry to take up a lot of that time, but it's just what you're talking about with Biden. Like you said, he's going against the Supreme Court. He thinks he is, you know, above their decision making, and essentially he's trying to bribe voters to remain in office.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. He's buying votes, but the larger problems in the economy are becoming more and more apparent. And so that strategy of taking taxpayer dollars and redistributing that to certain voter blocks is really, so far, seems like it might not be panning out. I just saw a new Gallup poll out today, where I heard about a new Gallup poll out today where President Biden's approval ratings are the lowest in history, lower than George W. Bush after the WMD controversy when he was in president.
Really?
In office, I mean. So he's got a big challenge ahead of him. Some of the GDP numbers for first quarter came out earlier this week, and we're not in a recession. The economy grew at about 1.6%. Really, anything under 2% is not good. The experts were predicting somewhere around 3.5% growth, and we're far off of that. We were half away from that. And inflation has ticked back up. That's not going at the highest rate that it has been before, but inflation is still going up and prices still remain high. So it's just very difficult to afford to live in America. And then when you throw in the rising interest rates, the cost of paying for your debt, credit card debt in this country is the highest it's ever been. Credit card interest rates are extremely high, and it's even hard to get a house. We've got an inventory issue. There's just not a huge inventory of new homes going up in the country, and that makes rents more expensive. Plus, the interest rates are going up, and that's making the mortgages more expensive. So it's a real challenge, especially for people, young people getting out of college, looking to move on with their life. They're gonna face some tough decisions, because this economy is not favorable to anybody except the very wealthy.
Yeah, you as an American, I should say an average American, people really need to pinch every penny they can, and I honestly believe it starts by, you know, looking at the college situation, saying, you know, questioning that, because that will relieve a lot of debt from people. And then also all these like luxury purchases. Do you need to buy new things? Or should you go on Craigslist or eBay or you know, Facebook Marketplace or wherever you find used goods? The thrift store. You can find a lot of good things at the thrift store. You know, this is something that my grandparents dealt with during the Great Depression, because they were they were kids, but they still remember it. In fact, when I interviewed them for a family history documentary that I'm putting together, they started crying a little bit, like remembering how, you know, there was times where their parents would not eat and they would barely eat anything, or like just the young kids would eat that day. And then the next day the older kids would eat. And I mean, thank goodness, you know, there are programs set up so most Americans aren't starving, but we shouldn't be so reliant on EBT and SNAP and, you know, I believe, and honestly, it almost made me cry, John, when I was running and I found out that something like 40, maybe half of Baltimore County's students are on free or reduced price lunches. And in order to qualify for those programs, that means the household income is below, I believe, $34,000. Or maybe even less than that. You got to really be living close to poverty levels to get on those programs. That's awful. I didn't know it was. I knew it was bad. I just didn't know it was that bad. And so, like, so many people. I mean, and most people aren't going to say this because they'd be embarrassed to. No, but you know, everybody wants to post, oh, look at my new shoes, look at my new handbag, look at my, you know, new car or whatever. But they're not going to say, hey, man, I just missed my utility bill. Like, people aren't going to just outright say that. And I'm so worried about the future of this country. So, and I'm assuming that's why you really got in, because you just look at what's going on. And you're like,
yeah, absolutely. The economy, to me, is always the number one issue. Other problems can be solved if the economy is working right and working for everybody. And you said earlier some of those options that people have, thrift stores and Facebook Marketplace, and all of those are terrific options. And there may be a shift going on in the country where people are genuinely looking at these other types of options. But the thing I want everybody to recognize and remember is the reason we are here is because of the Democrat policies, spending government money, thinking that they're going to give everybody free money, thinking that they're going to just keep putting stimulus after stimulus after stimulus into the economy, and it's just people buying stuff. And at the same time, they keep raising our debt and they keep raising the deficit. The results are evident. The results are apparent that it doesn't work. It didn't work. It was so apparent, and these policies were so bad, and they were put in place at a time right after COVID that it took only 2 years for that inflation to get up to 9%, gas to be the highest it had been in 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and we're still suffering from that. And the results, one of the things that we have to keep in mind is the Democrats and the Bidens, they talk about incomes being up, but in real life, they're still actually down just around 3%, about 2.5% or so, because they haven't gone up enough to keep up with the rising prices. But the rising prices went up because of Joe Biden's policies. So it's just this doom loop of spending, inflation going up, and businesses have no choice except to raise the incomes of their workers, so they can buy and afford all the stuff that's going up in price. And the things that I'm talking about, like food prices, are still through the roof, and that's not really thrown into the consumer price index when they're looking at inflation. The how much it costs to manage your debt has gone up. So there's a lot of problems with this economy, and quite frankly, Dutch Ruppersberger was just a rubber stamp for those policies, because in 2021, when Joe Biden took office, the Democrats had the House, they had the Senate, and they had the White House. They had absolute power. They could pretty much do whatever they wanted to do, and they did it. And Dutch Ruppersberger signed off on that. And if we send a Democrat back down there, they're going to keep doing the same things over and over. And if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. And right now, it's a disaster for everybody except the very wealthy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've said this before, I'll say it again. This is not the America when I was a kid that I grew up to, that I expected to run into as an adult. I mean, the America that I knew was you work hard, you work smart, you're able to get a job, and, you know, that's it. But now it's so hard even just to get through, because they have, you know, like these filters on job applications. And, you know, then it's like, well, maybe I should just open my own business. And that's hard to do too, because you got to worry about the government business licenses and things like that. And it's like every step of the way, the government just keeps getting in people's way. Now, they do help. I will say this. I although it's not perfect, Obamacare, I believe, helped a lot of people who may have otherwise possibly suffered unnecessarily. Really, it was a Band-Aid for the fact that not enough jobs could provide healthcare benefits. I mean, that's really what that was. And that's more, again, just like with what EBT and SNAP is, it's proof that people just aren't being paid enough. There's not enough of those good paying jobs to go around. And really that's a result, like you said, of government spending. If we were back at 1980s or 1990s level of debt, the value of our dollar, all you have to do is go on Google or Bing or whatever, type in inflation calculator. Look at how much money was worth even 20 years ago. We don't even have to go back to the 80s. Go type in 2004. Compare 2024 to 2004. it's ridiculous. The buying power of the dollar is why we're in the mess, and it's directly calls from the government getting very greedy. They want to give all their workers and contractors six-figure incomes. I see it. USAjobs.gov. I can see it. You know that you know starting salaries $80,000 to $120,000. GS-12 this and 14. You know whatever that. You know what I'm talking about, right? You know, and look, I get it, especially in Maryland, especially in Northern Virginia. It's expensive to live. So I get it. Like, I get why they do that, but that all gets put on the back of...
Well, what came first? Expensive to live or the crazy high government salaries?
Right. Now, would you like to talk about how the, we'll call it the open border policies, tie into the economy?
Sure. Well, let's finish up real quick the economy discussion, because there are things that we can do.
Okay.
And we talked about how bad things are, and everybody knows about that. So there's some things that we can do, and there's economic experts out there that are going to really be able to zero in. One of those guys, for example, is Stephen Moore. He was an economic advisor to President Trump in 2016, and this will give me an opportunity to plug an upcoming event. On May 2nd at Riley's Oyster in Timonium, economist Stephen Moore is going to be our headline speaker, and he's going to be talking about the economy. He's going to be talking about some of the America First policies that can be put in place if President Trump wins. So overall, the way I look at it, I'm a small government guy. We talked about how the government's too much involved. We need, from our federal government, less taxing, less spending, less regulating, less government overall, and that should include keeping in place the Trump tax cuts, which Joe Biden is threatening. It's a threat that he's going to raise taxes. The other thing is that we need to lower taxes on businesses. Right now, as a country, Ireland is flourishing and growing at a faster rate than almost anybody because they have the lowest corporate income tax in the world.
Oh, wow.
Ours is about 28% and theirs is about 12%. And so that's really bad for business. So we need to lower that business tax. There's some things we can do, like helping businesses accelerate when they write off things. So especially with small businesses, if, say, take your small business, for example, you're doing audio video work. If you wanted to invest in some new equipment and the equipment cost X and normally you would write that off over a certain amount over a certain number of years, you should have the option to write that entire amount off this year, which basically means if you bought, just for example, I'm probably devaluing this, but a $1,000 piece of equipment, you can write that $1,000 off and not pay taxes. It's $1,000 less that you would be taxed on as a business. So there's little things like that that can happen, and there's some deregulation that can happen. And I know by listening to Stephen Moore, there's some very targeted things that they can do in certain targeted industries. And then the other side of that is we need to reverse all of the Biden executive orders that restricted the harvesting, let's say, of our natural resources, of our gas, our oil, and especially our liquid natural gas and our coal. They've severely restricted that. Production is okay, but it's not meeting the demand that we have for energy. And our economy thrives off of cheap, abundant energy. And we've got a lot of liquid natural gas, one of the biggest reserves, if not the biggest reserve. And that's been the number one reason why America has gone down in our emissions because of using liquid natural gas. So there's a number of things that we can do. In short, we got to get the government out of the way. We've got to empower our businesses to do what they need to do to grow. Because my philosophy, my look at it is free people in a free country, in a free market economy, free to choose what's best for them and their families. And that's how families grow and improve. That's how communities grow and improve. That's how our country is going to grow and improve economically.
I agree. I wish we had smarter people in office who, you know, spoke like that on a regular basis. And that's, you know, I'm not endorsing anybody. Let's put it this way. I'm trying to be fair to everybody running. I'll just say this. The people we have in office right now, either they don't care or they're too ignorant, too, I don't want to say stupid, to understand that you can't keep using the American public as their piggy bank, as their line of credit. Like, it's going to end. It has to end soon, because eventually the levee is going to break, you know. And I don't want to see the flood. I do not want to see, you know, what happens when people start getting, you know, kicked out of their houses, when they start starving. Because I know history, and I know what happens when that happens, and it's not pretty.
We're not immune from that. And what that's going to mean is Democrats are going to want to increase all kind of social spending, all kind of welfare spending, and they're going to talk about the richest 1% not paying their fair share, just like they always talk about. And then their media is going to conveniently not talk about the Democrat policies that brought us to that, if we get there, which I hope we don't. We're not immune from it, but they'll just ignore the policies that brought us there.
And like I said, they are not, like, I don't think the Baltimore Sun, I don't think the WJZs of the world cover eviction court. It's an ugly truth that they do not want to talk about, because it makes all their, I said it earlier, the golden boys and gals that they have in office look bad. Because obviously people who are doing well aren't going to be evicted, right? They're not going to be, or foreclosed on. That's another thing that's, you know, that's going to happen again, right? Remember we had all the foreclosures that happened because the housing market peaked in 2000, let's say 7 and 8. That's going to happen again, because these houses are not worth $400,000. They're just not. Like, yeah, waterfront properties might be worth that much, but not like a little rinky-dink house that needs, I mean, I've been looking at, like, with a Zillow, I've been looking at Zillow. These houses are not worth that much, and they have come down in price. Don't get me wrong, but that's it's a mess. Our economy, unfortunately, is still a mess. To be honest with you, I don't think we've fully recovered since 2009. I grit my teeth saying this, but it's the truth. When Trump was in office, our economy was starting to get better. It's true. The guy, he knows international business. He knows money. He was putting in policies that I assumed, like, our government people had already put tariffs on imports, and, you know, that they were in line with our export, you know, what the United States were charged when we were exporting things. And that wasn't the case. And to be quite honest with you, I know it sounds a little conspiratorial. I remember when Trump started saying, I'm going to put tariffs on China. And not too long after that, COVID happened. I don't know, you know, if that was a coincidence or not. I'm just going to say it was a coincidence, but I thought that was a little interesting. Because what's the old saying? Countries are not going to invade the United States. Too many of us own guns. But there's other ways to come in, and that's where I'm going to bring in immigration policies. Because I am on the personal belief that we already had a lot of people coming into this country as it is legally, but then we have, and I'm going to throw it to the guy running for Senate now, Mr. Larry Hogan supported sanctuary policies, because he sure as heck didn't do anything about it while he was in office. So would you like to talk about open borders and...
Sure. Well, right now, on a national level, when you look at polls, the Democrats have been identified as the cause of the immigration problem, the immigration crisis. Rightfully so, because they did cause this. Joe Biden and the Democrat leadership, they caused this. And so the numbers are not all accurate, because it's just hard to tell, but there's upwards of 10 million illegal immigrants have come to the country since Joe Biden took office. There's over 100,000 known gotaways, where they've been able to count people running away from Border Patrol once they cross over. And there's some that got away that they don't know how many. And it, when you talk about the gotaways, it probably would not be proper to say that over 100,000 of those gotaways are bad people with bad intent.
Right. I would agree.
But it would be foolish to say that none of them are.
Right, because they have caught international terrorists. and they have caught people. I mean, how, from a national security standpoint, how do we have people from China sneaking in through the southern border? Why isn't enough people? That's something that really should be talked about like every day. Because that, to me, I mean, don't forget, we had a Chinese spy who was dating a member of Congress, right? Remember that?
Yes, I do.
What was her name? I can't think of it. Anyway, Fang Fang, that's her name. Okay, so Fang Fang, the Chinese spy, happened. And like that story kind of just came and went. And I'm thinking to myself, like, that's weird. And then we have this happening. Believe it or not, I was looking at Maryland statistics. For some reason, we have a lot of African immigrants. Why is that? Why do we have a lot of Middle Eastern immigrants? Middle East doesn't, they're not exactly the biggest fans of the United States, especially because the United States supports Israel. That you know, and all these people are coming up through the southern border. You have people from Nigeria, from Sudan, coming up through the southern border. Why is that? That's very weird. And then you have what I heard, again, another story that came and went, was that, and I'm not going to lay this at Biden's feet, but we'll just say at high offices in the White House, in the Capitol building, spent money on airplane rides for immigrants to come into the country through airplanes, not even sneaking across the border. Excuse my language, but what the hell is going on?
Well, on that particular thing, it seems to me that what they were doing was trying to not reduce the number of people coming in, but to lower the count coming across the border and try to do something to repair the optics of the video of the hordes of the tsunami of people coming across that border on a daily basis.
It's so ridiculous. It's almost like a Saturday Night Live skit or something, or some like movie that you wouldn't even believe unless it was reality. And this is going on. And I'm not saying like this is going on every day, but the fact that it even happened, the fact that we literally, I don't know about you, but if I want to get a plane ticket to Central America or to Southern America, it's a good chunk of change out of my wallet. You know, so, you know, and our tax dollars are paying for this, by the way. And it's just a mess. It's a mess. Even if the border was closed entirely, our economy would still be a mess. But we are literally piling a big problem onto another big problem. And this is why I'm so scared for the future of this country, angry for the future of this country. And it's like, you know, what do we do? And the best thing we can do is vote people into office and hope that our election system is not rigged. So, you know, because I do believe it's still worth it to go out there and vote. Because I think if you don't, like, honestly, you don't have any room to talk about politics. So, you know, I will be going to the voting booth, not trusting it entirely, but my goodness, I'm going to be crossing my fingers that the wrong people don't get reelected and their replacements. And just, I'm going to leave the floor to you, John, because I'm sorry, I probably talked way too much on this one. If you need 5 minutes, just say whatever you want to the Baltimore County Informer audience.
Again, thanks for having me here, Adam. I think what I'll do is first remind everybody, my name is John Thorman, and I'm running for Congress in Maryland's 2nd Congressional District. And maybe I'll just give a little bit of my background just to give people a feel of who I am and where I'm coming from. I've lived in Baltimore County most of my life, about 50 years. I was born in Baltimore and I grew up in Essex. After high school, I joined the Army, and I was in the Army for 4 years. I got promoted 4 times in 4 years, and after going through the Army's Leadership Development Course, I achieved the rank of Sergeant E5, and then my term was up. I actually enlisted for 3 years and was doing so well and liked it so much, I extended for another year. Then after the Army, some friends of mine, 3 other friends and myself, we started a company repairing medical devices. And we built that into a really nice small business. We took that from a $4,000 investment. And when I got when I left the company in 2005, at the peak, the company had 110 employees. We were doing $10 million a year in sales, and we had 8 locations in 6 states. And that was a really great experience. It was probably the best business experience of my life. But it has prepared me in a certain way, because I'm the only candidate in the race that has created jobs all across the country. And for a short period of time, we even had a location up near Toronto, Canada. So I've created jobs in a foreign country as well as in America. It afforded me the opportunity to do business in other countries. I've been to 6 other countries besides America, and that's not to brag. That is to simply convey to people that I've lived life in a way that's resulted in expanded horizons. I've gotten away from the little bubble that was Essex, Maryland. And after I left the company, I got into some other areas. I have all small business experience. I've been in the medical field. I've been in advertising. I've been in transportation. I've been in recycling. And so that gives me a very broad range of experience in different industries, all in small business. So I feel like that gives me an advantage over my competitors in that I've seen different industries. I know what small businesses need to grow. And one of the goals I would have when I get down to Washington would be on the House Select Small Business Committee. I think I would do a very good job there. I think I would be able to help get the government, I would think I'd be able to help get the government out of the way of small businesses. Personally, I've got 7 kids. I'm in a blended relationship now, and I've got 7 kids. We've got 2 grandkids. We still live here in Baltimore County, and having grandkids it's been just a blessing. It's been just a treat. So when I look at my experience of, I'm the only candidate in this race that is a veteran in the Army. I understand that, for example, financing and supporting the military is not just buying new airplanes. It's maintaining the barracks. It's providing food. It's keeping the electricity on. It's paying for the training. Our military needs a lot, and I'm dedicated and committed to supporting our military, because I believe a strong America equals a strong world. And when the world is safe and strong, America can prosper and the rest of the world can prosper. But I also want to support veterans. And there's a lot that I would like to get done. We've been talking for a lot. But I think that with my military experience, my leadership experience, my broad-based business experience, I think that makes me the best candidate to go up against the Democrats. I think I have a very good understanding of where they're coming from and what they're doing and how to address the voters in the district that I think would give us the best chance to get the independent voters and the moderate Democrat voters. And I think I would be the best candidate overall to serve the people of the 2nd District down there in Washington and be the 2nd Republican member of the House of Representatives instead of just having one. I think we're past due of having a Republican, and we need to have one down there. So my website is thormanformaryland.com. That's T as in Tom, H-O-R. M-A-N-N, the number 4, Maryland.com. You can see where I stand on a whole bunch of other positions there. There's also, I mentioned earlier, we're having an event on May 2nd at Riley's Oyster in Timonium. Reach out on Facebook and I can get you the details to sign up for that. It's going to be a great event. We got Stephen Moore, who is an economist to President Trump. And also it's going to be I'm doing it with Senate candidate Lori Friend. She's a great candidate. I think everybody should take a good long look at her. I'm voting for her. She's a nurse. She's a grassroots candidate. She brings some real good common sense decision-making to things. And I would recommend that you vote for her. And we're going to have a great time. And I'm out working hard, trying to earn votes, meeting people, and looking forward to winning the primary and teeing it up against whoever the Democrats serve up to us.
All right. Well, thank you so much, John, for joining us, and I wish you luck on your campaign.
Thanks, Adam. It was great being here.